You're listening to Roundtable Talks on RNIB Connect Radio, and today we're talking all about the ECLO service, or the Eye Care Liaison Officer service. ECLOs offer dedicated emotional and practical support to people with sight loss from the point of diagnosis. RNIB and their sector-wide partners have worked to place ECLOs in all hospitals across Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, and are working hard to cover all hospitals in England. Many ECLOs have lived experience of sight loss, and all ECLOs can offer a listening ear, help you to understand your condition, give resources to connect you with additional local groups and services, and so much more. They're here for you during and after diagnosis and can continue to provide support if you experience further changes in your sight or life. Beyond talking to patients, they also advocate for improved accessibility in hospitals and medical institutions. As RNIB celebrates 30 years of the ECLO service, we've gathered a group of people involved in the service to discuss what it means to them. Our first panellist is Holly Muncy. Holly is an ECLO at Broomfield Hospital and Orsett Hospital in Essex, which is a brand new service, and she's been in the role for 5 months. She is fully sighted but has a family history of congenital cataracts, and many of her family are certified sight impaired. Outside of work, she loves going to concerts with her daughter. Hi Holly, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Our next panellist is Matt Bauer, who is currently waiting for a diagnosis for his eye condition after retinitis pigmentosa was suspected and then ruled out. He was previously a restaurateur and pub manager, and he's now been with the RNIB for 3 years, 2 years as an ECLO and 1 year in management. Outside of work, he's also a big music lover. Hi Matt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our third panellist is Nathan Richards, who has been involved in the ECLO service for 3 years, receiving support from the ECLO at Queen Elizabeth, Birmingham. He lost his sight 3 years ago due to Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, resulting in central vision loss and being registered as severely sight impaired. He has recently joined the service as an ECLO himself, and outside of work, he loves kickboxing and gaming. Hi Nathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello guys.
And our final panellist is Lynn Martin. Lynn is a manager of the corneoplastic unit at the Queen Victoria Hospital and has been in the position for around 5 years. She's fully sighted and outside of work, enjoys reading and visiting historic sites. Hi Lynn, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We are going to be talking all about the ECLO service today, and I will come to you first, Matt. What has been the biggest change you've experienced so far in your time as an ECLO in terms of the service?
Well, I've been around a relatively short time in comparison to the 30 years the ECLO service has been running. I think the service is unrecognisable from when it began in Rotherham 30 years ago. Obviously, 100 plus ECLOs now. There's a lot more structure, a lot more joined up work in the way we do things now. As with regards to the service itself, changes are driven through, you know, social, economic circumstances of the people we support. So, for example, when they changed the TV licence was it the over 75s? We had a huge influx of people asking for certification so they could apply for the TV licence discount, which created a lot of work for ECLOs in clinics. And currently, I think we're on the precipice of a big change in technology and the way our patients or customers, however you want to call them, access information. So I think we're going to be looking more at digital engagement, indeed showing blind and partially sighted people how to use technology and make it accessible.
I think our service has changed considerably, and as a hospital we've made huge inroads into making the ECLO grow within the department and within the greater hospital as a whole. So not only do they stay within the corneal department, but they extend their services out to the ward areas, the burn speciality and everything else, and we actually wouldn't manage without them now. So
I obviously, being a very new ECLO, I wouldn't know what it looked like before, but I agree with Matt that technology is going to be the way forward, in the way that we have ECHO shows now and technology that you can point at an item and it can describe it to you or read it to you. I think training on that will be amazing for blind and partially sighted people, and it will really improve the way that they receive information.
I've been kind of lucky really to have gone through the process as a patient and then become an ECLO. So up until 3 years ago, I was scaffolding, so I've had to learn all about technology and stuff, as Holly and Matt have both said. So without apps like Google Lookout, seeing AI, life would still be a blank. And saying about technology, it's good now that CVIs are getting more electronic, because if it wasn't for my ECLO at Queen Elizabeth sending me my CVI electronically, I would still have been 2-3 years behind. So because she sent it electronically, I was able to get things like PIP sorted and universal credit, all different benefits and concessions, because that CVI was sent instantly. So technology is going to be the way forward, like everyone's saying.
We're still going to see the repercussions of COVID as well, I think. The way that that came and happened so quickly and is affecting everything, and it's still, we're feeling the ripples of that down the line. I think there was a lot of undiagnosed eye problems. I think there's definitely going to be a blip in patients. There's going to be more and more people affected by sight loss that didn't get care during the COVID times. And someone would refer to it as a tsunami of sight loss is headed our way. So we need to be prepared for that, really.
Even now, you have people who have that fear about coming into a hospital setting, because during COVID, it was the breeding place. And especially for the people, the older generation who have sight conditions, it's definitely still a worry for them to come into that setting and receive treatment. And it's something I speak to patients about quite a lot, that the repercussions from COVID, it's still something that's happening. It's not something that's done and dusted.
I think there were huge advances in that in some ways, because during COVID, patients couldn't come into the hospital, and the ECLO was there and actually supported via phone, but more importantly by video links, which is something a lot of patients, particularly the elderly, had never thought of before. And that opened up a whole new area for them. So they were still seeing people as much as their vision allowed and had that contact. And I think that opened up an area of the ECLO service that probably hadn't been used before. They felt that that isolation was reduced as a result of that.
What was your experience of the impact of COVID?
Like I said, things was done electronically, so they did their hardest to keep me out of the hospital, which was good because Queen Elizabeth was quite far from where I lived anyway, but it seemed a lot more remote.
It would be remiss of me not to mention my team if we're talking about remote delivery. So I think it was born out of the COVID pandemic and providing support remotely that the local national team was kind of born. So I run a team of 17 ECLOs who aren't necessarily linked to a clinic, and they work from home remotely, and we support and fill gaps. So if there's a vacant post, we can help remotely fill that. We support people with annual leave. We support new starters like Holly and Nathan when they start. When it's a bit overwhelming, we can take some caseload from them then and help in that way. Yeah, making sure there's no gaps in service throughout the year for whatever reason. So that's been a change in the service over the last year.
When I was first setting up and I didn't quite have the tools yet to reply to patients. When I first went into my service, they hadn't had an ECLO for quite a long time, and they had a list of patients ready to go for me to contact, but I didn't have the tools there quite yet to contact them patients. And I passed them on to Matt's team, and Matt's team looked after them for me and cared for them. And it also meant I could go back in and see how they had dealt with these patients and the information they'd given to the patients and learn from that as well. So it was beneficial for the patients, and it was beneficial for myself as well.
So we've talked about some of the changing demands that we've seen more widely, but people will come to the ECLO service with their own lives, their own circumstances, their own jobs that they want to adapt to, or their own hobbies that they want support pursuing. What's been the most surprising project or demand that you have met in your time as an ECLO?
I think that the realisation that people don't know that this service is available to support them. As I said, when I started as a new ECLO, there was a list of patients waiting for me who hadn't had any conversations about support. And hearing their stories of, I don't know what to do, I just sit in an armchair, I can't watch telly, I don't want to listen to it because I don't understand what's happening, I have no access to a radio, and just all these stories where people didn't know they could go and access support, which was I'm just the link. The support is there, but nobody's told them and nobody was there to tell them that this support existed. And the people that just, even with a talking book, their life, you know, they've got something in their life that they can listen to. And social groups, which give a purpose, they can go to these social groups once a week, and having support to maybe have sighted guides take them there. It's such a broad range of things that just seem very simple, but make such a big difference to someone's life.
Yeah, RNIB do a lot of stuff like for this. Like, I became a Sea Sport Differently champion before I was an ECLO, so I could open up kickboxing to more visually impaired people, because it doesn't really seem like a sport, speaking for myself with central vision loss, that you want to do, because it's hard to see a boxing glove coming at your face. So, but it's good to know that these sports are still available, and that, like with the ECLO service, promoting what RNIB and British Blind Sports, or like all other charities, the ECLO service promotes all this stuff, so you know it's available.
I have supported a lady who's absolutely petrified of cataract surgery, and I think her expectation was that I was going to force her into it or cajole her in some way, and that wasn't the case at all. We're there to empower them to make their own decisions, give her all the options. There is a risk, but also there's a reward. But if you're not confident doing that, we can go down the different path of certification, registration, and we can get you support. And every time she came to clinic, she's like, I'll do it. And then I'd get a phone call a day or two later saying, we're not going to do it. And that's fine, because it's not our job to push them one way or another. It's our job to help and support them and educate them in their decisions. I had one chap who came to me in clinic one time, and I went through all the usual things, benefits, he had them, he had everything. And I said, why are you here? And he was from Africa, but his family, his wife and the child still lived in Africa, and he was struggling to get them a visa. And that was all he wanted, was to be reunited with his family. So I thought, well, that's nothing to do with your eyes. But I looked into it, and there was a local ethnic minority alliance group who had someone that dealt with the travel visas and things like that, and rights to remain. And so we hooked him up with a lawyer, and I believe he's got reunited with his family over here, so that was quite rewarding. But it's just sometimes, yeah, it's just the little things. I had another chap, he didn't want any money, he didn't want any help, he didn't want anyone coming around to his house to give him a liquid level indicator. But then I showed him a CCTV desktop magnifier and how that could help him. And his eyes just lit up. He was just, I can do my stamp collecting again. And he grabbed his wife's hand and he really sort of squeezed it. And he was so happy. He's like, if I get one of these, I can go back to stamp collecting, which is all, that was the only thing he wanted. And just to make that tiny little difference for someone was really, really good.
Yeah, we run a support group for one of our patient groups. And within there, it was questions that you wouldn't necessarily have thought, support with lighting, to how to improve the light to make things easier for them to do, to stop the shadows and things like that. And it's little things like that that I hadn't thought about, but our ECLO had and was able to give all of that. And at the following group, it had made such a difference to this particular patient's life that she was able to go home and actually put some of this into practice. And then effectively her life had improved as a result of it. And sometimes it's those little things that we don't necessarily think about. And the other thing that our ECLOs have found is the demand for training amongst the staff. So they run sort of various training sessions within the hospital about understanding visual impairment and how to help people that got visual impairment, and the demand for those and the take up of them has been so great, and the fact that that is then fed down to patients on the ward and in clinic, because we all then have a better understanding and can help push that across as well.
Yeah, I think the Living Well with Sight Loss courses are really helpful for patients, but then like Lynn was just saying, the sight loss awareness courses for staff, they're a game changer, because last year when I had a pacemaker surgery, I remember being in the bed and someone came around to offer me a cup of tea. I'm on the cardiology ward. I don't really know where I am. can't find a kitchen, toilet, I mean, sight loss. So someone came around to offer me a cup of tea and they said, do you want a drink? And I just looked blankly, said, do you want a drink? And then the lady came over, the nurse came over and tapped me and said, do you want a drink or what? I said, sorry, I'm blind. And she says, it doesn't say anything about over your bed. So that was good that then sight loss awareness was implemented by the ECLO at that hospital and things have changed there.
Yeah, absolutely. And often people aren't aware of the full scope of the service and the different times that they can provide support. What is a common misconception people you've worked with have had about ECLOs and kind of the scope of the role?
I think the biggest misconception is the difference between an ECLO and a low vision assessor. That's the biggest challenge I've come across in my role with it being new as well, because we don't have a low vision assessor in my hospital. So a lot of people are there asking me to do low vision assessments, and I've had to quite firmly say, no, that's not something we cannot, I can offer, but I can refer into. But also I've seen doctors call names from their doors, and patients can hear the sound and their names, but they can't see where the sound is coming from. And I feel that is a lack of training and something that needs to be addressed. And I've actually got an audit coming up next week where I'm going to talk a bit more about sight loss awareness and say, come and get your patient and introduce yourself and lead them to your room. And just little things like that, which make such a big difference to the patient. But because the doctors feel that they're time's constrained, they might not think about it. So it's definitely something that needs to be improved in my hospital, at least.
Yeah, I guess I thought originally that they were there just to give psychological support more than anything else, you know, and maybe provide home support and things like that. I hadn't realised the technical detail of their role, and working closely with our one, seeing what they actually do now. And some of our doctors come from abroad. This is their first role in this country. They don't even know they exist. So to see the level of enlightenment on them when we actually explain the full level of commitment within that role and what they're able to do, and then see them beginning to use it, is quite a good feeling to see that that's being pushed forward and that role is being developed more as a result of that. It's pushing that out by advertising, getting the ECLOs out there where it's feasible to do that, and just pushing it. I mean, we have in clinic an enormous banner that goes up when ECLOs in clinic, and you can't miss it. So it's sort of an eye-catching thing that everybody can see. But I think it should be included in things like doctor's orientation, their induction days, you know, let them know that that service is there and that we can offer it, and at what point it can be offered, because it's such an important service to these patients.
Absolutely. I mean, in Rotherham in particular, I was working very hard to re-establish links with the stroke clinic because communications had faltered a little bit. So yeah, stroke clinic, diabetes clinic, all these departments, like you said, everything that affects sight loss, we should be there saying, if people affected by sight loss, get them to come see us.
But being a new ECLO, my idea is that if someone doesn't know I'm there, they're not going to refer to me. So our new doctors, they get an induction pack. So I've made an introduction to myself, an introduction to CVIs, and included a CVI pathway, which goes into every new doctor's pack. I'm speaking at audits, and I know all ECLOs who are in eye hospital clinics do deliver sight awareness training to their hospital staff as well. And also reaching out to other clinics, being new, I haven't quite got to that stage yet, but I want to get to other wards and other departments in my hospital and say, hi, I'm here. Because once they know I'm there, I can maybe do my rounds and be like, you got anyone who would benefit from having a chat with me? But it's getting the word out there, and it's building relationships with these services and these people and these doctors and nurses, so that they know you're there and can refer the patients who need that support. It's singing it from the rooftops, in my opinion, and letting people know that we've got some good information for people, which is really going to benefit them, and building that trust that we're going to do well by their patients. So please refer them into us.
And Nathan, how about you? What did you know about ECLOs when you first got your diagnosis, or did you know about them at all?
I didn't even know ECLOs was a thing. On the Monday, I had blurry vision. Tuesday, I went to Specsavers. Wednesday, went to my local hospital. Thursday, went back to my local hospital to see the senior. He referred me then on the Friday to the Queen Elizabeth on the Monday, where I got registered severely sight impaired. And that was really fast. And then I was told by the neuro-ophthalmologist, I'm going to do a referral to the ECLO. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Like, free T-shirt or something? No, not free T-shirt, but they'll help with your CVI. I'm like, okay, what does the CVI mean? The ECLO will tell you all about it. They're going to register as severely sight impaired. I'm like, oh my God, that does sound good. And then, obviously, the ECLO from Queen Elizabeth talked me through what it meant, said that it's not such a dirty thing, which kind of seems like at the time, I don't want to be registered, that people are going to think I'm blind. You're not blind. But then, obviously, the talking through the process was great, especially coming from, like, a scaffolding background. The worst thing ever would be to lose sight. But because she spoke about it in not a positive light, but it was like it was okay. So I wasn't as worried as I would have been without an ECLO explaining to me. Because obviously consultants and stuff don't have time to explain the whole process.
Yeah, I agree with everything everyone said. I didn't like being referred to as the CVI guy. You'd introduce yourself, oh yeah, you're the CVI guy. No, we're so much more than that. Yeah, we're not low vision. We are emotional support, but we're also practical and pragmatic and offer an abundance of things, a knowledge of local support that's available and national support that's available. So yeah, that was the common misconception, that the CVI guy, oh yeah. But yeah, the patients have a misconception as well sometimes. They're like, they think you're going to bundle them off into a care home or whatever, and that really isn't the case. It's about maintaining independence, not taking it away, you know. They think, yeah, you're going to put them in a care home or force them to do things they don't want to do or get carers in, and they want to make their own cup of tea. And that's like, fine, we can help and support you with that. I want to listen to my own records. I want to continue to collect antiques or whatever it happens to be. And just teaching people to adapt the way they do things. Don't stop doing your hobbies. Just think about doing them in a new way. You might not be able to read a book, hold a book and read it, but, you know, you can read on an iPad, you can have audio books, you can get iPad covers that feel like books. So it's changing people's mindset a little bit and opening the mind up to doing things in different ways so they can continue to do the things that they enjoy doing. You have to remember as well, when they see an ECLO, sometimes they're in a state of shock. They've just been told life-altering news. You know, like Nathan said, you're off to see the ECLO. What does that mean? Everything's happening very quickly. And then, you know, as an ECLO, you want to help, so you bombard them with information. And if they take any of it in, it's great. So it's like, here's my number. Get back in contact. We have a waiting well service as well within RNIB, which is great. So we say, listen, 6 weeks' time, my colleague's going to give you a call. Make sure that everything that we've said is going to happen today has happened and check in on you. And if you need to come back to us, absolutely no problem. But yeah, I used to get calls, you know, the day, the week, months. I still get phone calls from Rotherham now, and I've been out of the post a year, of people coming back saying, oh, this has changed. Can you help me? And yeah, that's what we're there to do.
Yeah, you get patients calling all the time for the reason that Matt said as well. You have patients who are in a state of shock when you're there to certify them. They've just been told a diagnosis. You've then certified them in a certain way and given them a bunch of information, but they've had to then go away and process. I've had patients who have processed it and then come back to me in a better frame of mind, but also patients who have gone away and processed it and come away in a worse frame of mind. And then we have to talk about the other services available, such as counselling and things like that. But I'm always glad that they feel they can come back to me and that I know I'm that source of support, because it's wonderful to know that they know they have somewhere to go, because I'd hate that people would think that they can't come back to me. And like Matt said, with the waiting well, I refer 99.9% of my patients into waiting well, because you don't know how long it's going to take for someone to digest the information we're giving them, or even to digest the information that the consultant's given them. It's an ongoing process. It's not a one and done thing with sight loss. And it's important that people have that support going all the way through their journey.
Like, speaking from a patient's point of view, I still regularly call my local ECLO. I sometimes have to go to cardiology appointments and stuff, and I'll just give him a little knock on his door and So how's it going? But I'll make sure now that I try and give him some positive news too, so he's not just bombarded with negative stuff. So for me, the other week, having to go to him and get some knowledge for the interview, it was nice to be able to phone him up on Monday and say, "You never guess what, mate, I'm an Eclo." So that was kind of nice. And I think he got a bit of a lump in his throat too, because he's seen me through the whole process. But the lady that originally gave me the CVI, I only spoke to on the phone. So I never actually got to meet her up until last week, joining the role. She walked in the room and she says, "Hello, Nathan, my name's blah, blah." I got up out my seat and I walked all the way around to her and I squeezed the life out of her and I says, "Thank you so much, because without you, I would not be in the position I'm in at the minute." So speaking from a patient's point of view, you guys are really, really inspiring.
I'm welling up here.
Yeah, we've got one patient in particular I can think of who really struggled to come to terms with the fact that he was losing his sight. We run an SOS line that patients can call, and he was bombarding it until he was introduced to our ECLO at the time. And she took him on and she's followed him through. And not only has he accepted his sight loss, he's got married, and she's seen him go through all the ups and downs that have led through that. And we've now changed ECLO, but he's actually connected with the new one as well. And he just, again, like we were saying, he just pops in every once in a while now to say, "I'm fine, thank you, you know, I'm doing well." And to see him come through from this worried, frightened gentleman to where he is now. I was talking to him the other day and he said how much he's appreciated the support that he's had, not only from the doctors but also from the ECLO, and both of them, because I said we've had a change recently, and he's taken on board the new one and is as happy with the support he's getting there. So it's really nice to see that journey and to see that it hasn't finished. It's tailed off because he doesn't need as much support, but he's still got every bit that he needs when he needs it. And that applies to so many patients that come through our clinic, because so many of them are long-term patients, and they stay on the books for months.
Given everything we've spoken about today, what is one hope that you have for the ECLO service in the future?
It's just to make people more aware of ECLO earlier in their sight loss journey. But to be there at the beginning, if you're telling someone they've got glaucoma, if they're being told they have AMD, if they've been told they've got whatever it is, they need to be made aware of the support that's out there at that point, so that when they feel they need us, we're there. Not at the end of their journey within the NHS or the eye clinic, and it's felt no more can be done. Here's your CVI, go and see the ECLO. We need to be not in the middle, right up at the beginning, to make them aware that help is available. You might not need us now, you might not need us ever, but if you do, then we're here.
I would also echo Matt and just say that I want to broaden the status of ECLO, but even past maybe the eye clinic, to the point where my life before this, I worked in high street opticians, and you had people who would have benefited even at that time. People, when they were being made, like having referrals into hospital eye services, with maybe a 6-month wait into that service at the hospital. And they've got all that anxiety and all that dread of having to go to the hospital without a diagnosis. So even at that point, I think an ECLO would be beneficial to these patients if they require it. So I think broadening the spread of ECLO to community, to hospitals, to anyone who is in a position where they need that support would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that really. I mean, we've extended our ECLO within the hospital out to the ward areas, but to see it go out into the community so those patients that are waiting long time for their appointments can start to get some support before they even get to us, and actually have better expectations when they arrive with us. So they're already tuned into a little bit more of what might happen and where their journey is going to go and take them, and what support they've got all along that journey. Because sometimes that wait for that appointment is too long, and they're in pieces when we get them, and that could have been stopped before that. So extending that ECLO reach out would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, without the ECLO service, I literally would not be here. That word at the start used to infuriate me, journey, because everyone would say it like, "Oh, you're just on your sight loss journey." I'm like, this isn't a journey, this is a train crash. I've lost everything. I've gone from working to sitting in the house, smelling paint dry. And that's how you feel, because you can't even watch it no more. And then spending a week in a mental health hospital because I got that low. And then being in touch with the local ECLO service and he's saying, don't worry, all is not lost, light's at the end of the tunnel. And I sat there and I shouted, I ranted. I left him with trauma. He was used to that. He says, I'm here for you to unload. And that's why I carried on going back and back. And now the journey isn't such a dirty word to me because I understand it. And I'm glad I've came out of the other side with the help of the ECLO service. If people are in the know, like you're saying, even before they know that they're going to experience sight loss, just to know that there's something there in case anything ever does happen is a massive positive.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio for our roundtable talk to celebrate 30 years of the ECLO service. If you want to learn more about ECLOs and how to meet one in person, or want any other advice about sight loss, then call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. It's open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Or you can email helpline@rnib.org.uk or say, Alexa, call RNIB helpline to an Alexa-enabled device.